Hello, and welcome to The Squeal, PIC's swine management podcast, featuring in-depth conversations on topics that matter to you. PIC is the global leader in swine genetics. At PIC, our goal is to make our customers the most successful pig producers by providing them with the best genetics. We know our business success depends on yours. Continuing our conversation on reproductive success, we discuss actions which provide positive outcomes. With us, Tosh Farms' Jose Santiago.
My name is Jose Santiago. I work for Tosh Farms. I'm one of the sow production managers. One of my roles in our system is help our system reach our goals.
And PIC's Karina Veer and Sergio Canabate.
This is Karina Veer. I'm a swine nutritionist with PIC, and I provide technical support to our customers globally.
My name is Sergio Canabate. I'm originally from Spain. I'm based here in North America, and I'm working in PIC reproduction team.
We're going to shift gears a little bit, and I want to talk a little bit about success. We've talked about this is a fail. We know that when we have animals that are non-optimal that we're bringing into our breeding herd, it's a mistake. But we also know that we have all done it because we had to. So that's that part of it. But when we are successful, what are some of those things that we've done that have worked well? And I'm thinking about gilt development, puberty induction, body condition management. What are some of the things that have worked best, worked well for you in your experience or in those operations with which you have worked that have given you positive results?
We need to look at the problem as a, you know, considering the big picture, and we need to make a production strategy when we try to fix this kind of herd efficiency, reproduction efficiency problem. So I think that we need to look at, we need to take 20 weeks of production. We need to take one reproductive cycle. And we need to start working on the basics. We need to start working on the foundation, right? Because gills, starting with gills, they need to be part of the solution and not be part of the problem, right? So because I need to breed more, I'm going to select, my gill selection is going to be more loose, right? And I'm going to allow to enter into my system problematic gills, right? Because I need to bring more, right? I'm going to bring more gills, so they're going to be crowded, right? So in this case, we need to start over in that specific phase of the production and say less. We need to do it better here. Gills need to be part of the solution and not be part of the problem, because we need to replace opportunity females, opportunity sows, they need to be replaced by good gills. Just to let them the chance in the next 20-week period to hit target, but with a higher quality of female, right? And higher quality of gills. So gill selection, HNS program, to me, should be the first step in a long-term success.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you, Sergio, and we know that the gills are the foundation of the successful of a successful sow herd. And I think it's pretty interesting, you know, those targets that we had for first breeding of those gills regarding their age at first breeding, weight at first breeding, detected estrus at first breeding. And recently, the PIC and the group from University of Alberta, they reevaluated a data set from commercial systems and to try to validate those recommendations or those targets or refresh those targets. And again, the message is still the same, that we want to breed those gills in their second detected estrus. We know that if we breed them in their first heat, they're going to have reduced farrowing rate, total born, and retention rate. And then the same thing with breeding older gills or outside of that range of 200 to 225 or 220 days of age. So if we breed them older, we know from the data that they're going to have a lower retention rate up to their third farrowing the herd. And same thing with overweight, breeding overweight gills. We know that they're going to have a heavier maintenance throughout their entire life, and likely they're going to be heavier or even fat at farrowing. And we know all of those negative consequences from having fat animals at farrowing and their like that impact in their lactation performance. And also, we had this big data set from a customer in Europe where they were looking at the body condition of those gilts at their first farrowing. And it's clear for us that as we have fed our gilts in their first farrowing, their retention rate up to their third and fourth farrowing, the herd is significantly reduced compared to those gilts that are arriving in an ideal condition at their first farrowing. So again, agreeing with our biases, right? And we know that as we have fed animals at farrowing, they're going to have reduced lactation feed intake and increased body reserve losses. And that's going to, again, cascade and result in a negative subsequent reproductive performance. And we know that as they are heavier at farrowing, the bigger is going to be their losses in lactation. And for those gilts, when we separated them in two categories of body condition losses in that first lactation, as we pointed out before, we know that if they are overweight at or fed at farrowing, they're going to have a significantly reduced farrowing rate or longevity in the herd. But the more they lose condition, the lower, even lower is their longevity in the system. So I think those are things that sometimes are overlooked, and they have a big performance impact in the system and economic impact in the system.
I'm going to that question. I got several thoughts on that conversation of feed and gilts and all that inclusive. So I understand every system is unique. Every system has its challenges and every system has its benefits. But at some point, you need to sit down and decide what you want your flow or what you want your system to do. At some point, or if you have irregular, if you're getting more gilts to cover, poor animals or marginal animals because you need them, fair rate, whatever, that's okay. Sometimes you can't get away from breeding those older gilts. Those older gilts, you know you're losing on them. You know they don't lactate well. You know they're not going to last long. But you have to come up with a plan.
Yep.
You have to fix that. You have to say, okay, we're going to bite the bullet here. We know these older gilts or these heavier gilts, but I want to fix these holes, whatever that reason of these gilts are. But you have to come up with a plan. You have to have a plan in place where you get everything back into normal in the next 20 weeks or 26 weeks, whatever that is. You have to have a plan. The correct gilts, the correct age, the correct HNS program, the correct whatever your system does, you got to at some point focus on the quality versus that quantity. You come up with a plan of you need X amount of gilts depending on your size of herd. How do you make that? Once you have a consistent HNS flow or target, that fixes basically your flow. So there's many ways to look at it, but again, every system has to decide what direction they want to go. But just overflowing herds with gilts, older gilts or younger gilts, it's not fixing anything. There has to be a plan in place and utilize your gilts properly.
And that plan, Jose, in most cases is not a short-term plan, right? We cannot see short-term solutions for reproductive efficiency issue, right? It's going to take 20 weeks, 26 weeks, right, to see a positive outcome, right? Because, as you said, we cannot get rid of all of the questionable female that we have in the farm, right? We need to make a plan and to set which are going to be our current strategy in the next, let's say, 20 weeks, right? How many gills we should breed for the next 20 weeks to replace them or to be able to do not breed them back in our breeding groups, and making sure that all the pieces are in place at the same time. I do believe that working just in a specific area at time is not going to fix the problem. We need to work in gilt selection, as everybody mentioned. We need to work in HNS program and HNS flow. We need to work on culling strategies, right? We need to review the breeding practices as well, right? And we need to analyze our reproductive failures over time just to see if we have, you know, if they are getting better as well, right?
Yeah, but Sergio, you when you talk about also, one thing that we missed here is that your gilt selection, you have to select
yes.
the best gilts. You can't yes. select, you can't survive selecting 90, 95% of the gilts that you receive. You
Absolutely.
Have to select the best gilt, the best feet, the best teeth, the best conformation, the best structure, your best growing fastest animals. And you got to evaluate those things, right? And
yes.
and that's super, super important. And yeah. we fail many times in that area.
And I think, Jose, this is the first step, right? This is the first thing to do. Gilt quality. Gilt quality.
When we say that we're not selecting sometimes the right animals, isn't it a matter if we say grades A through D, we all want the A's. We want the A's all the way through. Sometimes we have to pull some B's, correct?
At the end, the gilt selection, there is not black or white, right? What, based on your analogy with A, B, and C, first we need to be focused that there is no C's in the flow. We need to be able to identify the one that we know by far that they are not going to make it, right? Especially the one with a poor growth, with a poor leg structure, they're not going to make it. That shouldn't be part of the production system. So that is something that we need to make sure that is not happening, right? And then based on gilt availability that you could have, obviously we want to select A's, right? But we don't want to be shortening the number of gilts that the farm need, right? But just going through a selection process just is worth it. It's something that needs to be in place at the farm that in many cases is a non-selection process more than a selection process, right?
So they are saying, A, they are female. Mm-hmm. They qualify.
To get a process to select A's, it's not as simple as say, I'm going to select today all the A's that they have, because probably we don't have many or we don't have as much as we need, let's say in that way. Also, the systems need to be built that, right? Need to be built that process to be able to select 75-85% of females and with a grade A.
Yes, and that's a big important part. The system must be fundamentally sound for your gilt performance to improve. You want to select all those A's, but like Sergio says, you're better off if you go in there, you shouldn't have those C's. If you do have, that's stuff that we need to look into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you need to reduce your variance. So I appreciate, Jose, that you said that you need to have a plan and you need to follow it. So if I have a plan that I am ready to improve, how would I take steps? Where would I begin? If I said, you know, we can do better than this, what are some of the things that I should do, look at first on the road to improvement?
There's many things to look at. Sergio, chime in anytime you want. I would say you gotta focus on what is it that your system wants. What are you looking for? You know, what is it that your system wants to do? So you first, you know, what is your problem, right? Is it farrow rate? Is it conception rate? Is it groups? Whatever that is. But if we're talking about gilt introduction and a consistent flow and a good 26, 52 weeks consistency, you gotta look at your holes. You gotta look at your holes. And you got to fill those holes because peaks and valleys are your number one enemy. You have to be consistent.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. I think that the word here is consistency on hitting breeding targets, consistency on hitting farrowing target, and consistency accomplishing the number of gills bred per week. That consistency, we need to build that consistency. And again, I always talk about 20 weeks reproductive cycle. We need to know, as Jose mentioned, the holes. Okay, I'm short on mating in those weeks, or I'm going to be short on mating in those weeks. I need to have gills or wind cells to fill out those gaps, because one of the things that we review in the last year, when we were talking about, or when we were analyzing how a herd reproductive efficiency could look like, is not the efficiency to accomplish breeding targets or farrowing targets or guild breeding targets. It's the consistency in 20 weeks. How many weeks of, out of 20 farms are hitting the targets? And that consistency is the key. We need to have a plan to make sure that farms are able to hit breeding targets in 100%, farrowing targets in 100%, but that is going to happen in more than 90% of the weeks in 20 weeks reproductive cycle. Because in that way, farms are going to be predictable, but are going to be predictable in the number of cool sows that they need to pull out and the quality of cool sows that they need to work on. They're going to be predictable in the number of gills being bred or ready to be bred every week. They're going to be predictable in the number of wean sows that they're going to be wean and they're going to be ready to be bred. So everything is going to be predictable. So analyzing that information as a big picture, and as Jose said, looking at where are the holes, what is how many gills, what is going to be the gill introduction into the farm, focusing on gill quality, HNS program, recording, how many gills are going to be bred or going to be ready to be bred in 3 weeks. That's the first step that we need to work on.
Yes, we're working with a predictable cycling animal.
Yes.
And you don't plan 1 week at a time. You got to plan 4 weeks ahead. You know, you're farrowing a small group. Okay, what do I need to do? Either the week of or this week. So the blessing of a cycling animal is that you can predict to punch in those holes that you do have to start somewhere. And you may not fix it in one turn. It may take you two turns to fix it because, you know, if you're short 50 animals, breeding 50 extra gilts is not fixing your problem either. So you got to learn how to balance that. Again, but it's a process.
Yeah, it is a process. Yeah. And Jose, as a note, in that process, also we need to prioritize which opportunity sows we are going to continue to be breeding to hit target, right? Because we can, as you said, sometimes takes two turns, right, to fix it. So if we are able to analyze information to say, okay, what is going to be the farrowing rate of late winners, right, of sows being bred after day 7 to day 14 after they were weaned. What is the conception rate and farrowing rate of those animals? What is the farrowing rate of animals bred after a reproductive failure like a return? What is the farrowing rate of animals bred after two returns? What is the farrowing rate bred of sows nips being bred? We need to start pulling out the ones that they are impacting higher the our farrowing rate. Right. So if the higher impact is sows bred after abortion, stop breeding abortions. Right. So they have to have a plan prioritizing which are going to be the animals that they are not going to be bred anymore.
I'm thinking about what is a variant in these plans. And I think of health issues. I think of nutrition. Are those the key variants, those things which can impact what we're about, or are there other things out there as well?
I like more of the analogy of Mike Tyson says, everybody has a plan until you get hit in the face. So it can vary. You're right. Health, you know, you can get flu, you can get any other diseases. There's so much that can go wrong. It's a long plan, but you got to do it 1 week at a time, and it's hard because you want these 20 weeks to be over, but it's not like a farrowing house that you can turn it very quickly. When you're trying to fill in groups, you're 1 week at a time, and until you prep check, you don't know what you got. So, Sergio, how do you overcome those?
Oh, yeah. After a big health outbreak, you know, from the vet standpoint, obviously, they wanted to get the farms negative, right, or stable, right? But from the production or reproduction standpoint, I'm thinking how many marginal females that farm is breeding to keep the throughput. And obviously, there is something that they got to do, right? But also, what I try to think is what is going to be the backup plan when the farm is stable to, you know, to get back to normal, right? To
get back to that. And that's key. Like I was going to say that you have to have a backup plan. I mean, and that's going to probably be the week of if something's going on or something.
Yep.
You're going to get off task, but you have to stay focused. And I know it sounds off, but if something happens, you still got a plan. It doesn't matter what happens. If it's bad or good, you still have to plan, and you got to get together with your team. You got to get together with your leadership. And as a leader, you have to stay focused on a plan. Yes, this happened, but we still can't deviate from this issue. So you still have to plan. You still have to adjust your plan, modify it, and be flexible, you know, be able to adjust. It's going to change things, but you still have to have a plan.
Bringing it a little bit to the nutritional perspective, I think sometimes also when we have one issue and we try to fix it in a short term, we may create another issue that we were not predicting before instead of correcting the root cause of it. And just to give you an example, mainly those young females, they are more prone to lose more body condition or body reserves during the lactation process. And we know that that's going to have a negative impact in the embryo survival and embryo quality and subsequent reproductive performance. And one of the things that we nutritionally in those initial third of the gestation or in those first 30 days of gestation that we want to do is to try to recover those body condition that was lost in the previous lactation. But sometimes what we are learning today is that more is not always better. So what the recent research is showing us, if we feed them too much in those first 30 days of gestation to try to recover what happened to her or those negative impacts that happened to her previously in the lactation process, that sometimes is going to be too much from a reproductive perspective standpoint. Yes, she's going to be able to recover the body condition losses better, but we know that when that level is what the research is showing us today, over 190 or 200% of the maintenance of that animal, then we start to see a reduction in the subsequent total born by about one piglet. And also in that recent research done in a commercial scale, they didn't see a statistical negative impact in farrowing rate, but in those females that were fed too much in that first 30 days of gestation, numerically their farrowing rate was also reduced. So clearly overfeeding them in that period, we can bring them back to condition more rapidly. However, we need to think about the negative impact that we're going to have in their subsequent reproductive performance. So instead of trying to fix it, the issue in the short term, we need to think about what is causing those females to lose body condition and try to act proactively in the root causes instead of a short fix.
This is something that we need to look at long term rather than short term.
PIC's Corinna Veer joining Tosh Farms' Jose Santiago and PIC Sergio Canavate in part two of this three-part series on reproductive success on the squeal. Whether you're tuning in for the first time or you're a longtime listener, take a second to subscribe to the squeal. It's the easiest way to stay up to date with the latest podcast episodes. Just find the subscribe or follow button wherever you listen to podcasts. Already a subscriber? Visit your phone settings and turn notifications on so you'll never miss an episode. For PIC, the international leader of continuous genetic improvement in swine breeding stock and in world-class technical support to the global pork supply chain, I'm Ned Arthur. Thanks for joining us.